Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
My first guest this afternoon is Advocate Paul Hoffman, Director at the Institute for Accountability in Southern Africa. And boy, oh boy, is that the correct guest to open this afternoon with, because it's exactly the kind of specialization that I need to weigh in on the discussion that we're going to have now. Advocate Paul Hoffman, thank you so much for your time on this public holiday. Appreciate your input.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to your listeners, and good afternoon to them.
So, Advocate, what I proposed to do is to kind of look at some of the more significant freedoms afforded to us by the Constitution, and maybe have you comment on them, and kind of maybe even perhaps ask you to kind of give us a grade as to where we stand vis-a-vis those particular freedoms. Before I do so, though, when we talk about freedom in the constitutional sense, and I'm not talking the nostalgia speechy kind, to what extent do you think it has been kind of inculcated into the value system of who we are as a society? Or are we rights conscious, in other words? Am I making any
yes,
sense?
I get the point you're driving at. Do we appreciate what the Constitution has given us?
Yes.
Or have we been a little neglectful?
That's where I'm going.
Taking the values of the Constitution on board. I think the beginning point has to be the basic difference between the old South Africa and the new South Africa. And a lot of people think it's because we have a non-racial, non-sexist democracy in place now, whereas before, we had this apartheid system. Actually, the real basic difference is that in the old South Africa, there was a limited form of parliamentary sovereignty, which meant that the politicians, people in parliament, held the reins when it came to the exercise of power. Now, we have a constitutional democracy under the rule of law, and the politicians in parliament cannot conduct themselves and cannot pass laws that are inconsistent with the values of the Constitution. And once more South Africans appreciate that, we will be better able to create the new order that is envisaged by the Constitution, but which has not unfolded quite as we had hoped when we started out in our rainbow nation glory 30 plus years ago.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it's 32, according to what I've read this morning, swatting up for discussion I'm going to be having with you right now. So if you don't mind, I want to hop into some of those very significant rights and freedoms that are afforded to us by the Constitution. And as I said, I'd really love you to perhaps just comment on a very high level as to where you think we are in respect of those particular rights. So let's start with a really big one, equality and dignity. This is supposed to be like the bedrock of absolutely everything. If you had to give South Africa a grade on how we're doing in respect of that, what would it be?
Yes, I get you. You're talking about sections 8 and 9 of the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights is chapter 2 of the Constitution, and it contains between sections 8 and 35 the various rights that are guaranteed to all in terms of the new constitutional order.
Yeah.
Section 7 actually says, in terms, that the state must, not may, must respect, protect, promote, and fulfill all of the rights in the Bill of Rights. Now, that doesn't mean that we had some sort of magic formula that could instantly transform South Africa from what it was before the Constitution was adopted as our supreme law, and magically turn our a political situation into something quite different to what was there before. Some of the rights in the Bill of Rights are subject to progressive realization on the basis of available resources of the state.
Well,
others are immediately realizable.
Yeah.
For example, education, no ifs, no buts, you're entitled to education and you don't have to wait for the state to find the money to give the education that everybody needs and deserves. other things like access to housing, healthcare, and so on, those are subject to progressive realization. So what we have is an obligation on the state, and the courts have said, if you're going to say, I haven't got any money to make the trains safer, shall we say, then the onus is on the state to explain why it is that it doesn't have the money. Now, the problem at the moment is that about 10% of our gross domestic product goes west on the proceeds of corrupt activities in the country. And that means that the development of the country and the promotion, respect for, protection of human rights does not happen, doesn't unfold at the rate that it could if we had not allowed corruption to become, well, it's corruption with impunity, to become as rampant as it has in South Africa in the past 30 years. And certainly, if you listen to the proceedings of the Madlanga Commission or listen in on the evidence being presented to the ad hoc committee in Parliament apropos of the complaints made by General Nonkahla Mkhwanazi, then you will see a picture emerging of a dysfunctional criminal justice administration that is quite incapable of protecting us against the ravages of organized crime and corruption. Indeed, the president himself, in his State of the Nation address in February this year, said that the two greatest threats to our democracy in South Africa are organized crime and corruption. And of course, the two are very close relatives anyway. A lot of organized crime involves corruption.
It's really concerning what you are stating, because it has the ability, the possibility of causing this whole constitutional project to lose legitimacy entirely. I mean, if it's not delivering, at some point you can't just say this is now the painful tale of our apartheid legacy. At some point, it has to deliver. And you also kind of wonder, looking at the numbers of people who vote, the voter turnout, why there is a reluctance on the part of the South African electorate to hold the incumbents responsible.
To account.
Why?
To account.
Why?
Now, the answer to that is that some of the expectations of the ordinary voter have been a little bit unrealistic. If you entered into the New South Africa in 1994 expecting everybody to have a double-story house with two garages and a Mercedes-Benz parked in the one garage and a Hilux in the other, then you have unrealistic expectations of what the new dispensation has in store for you. But, you know, they were careful about this in putting the constitution together. They created six institutions called Chapter 9 institutions. So those institutions are born in Chapter 9 of the constitution. And they are there to bed down the ideals and ideas of our constitutional democracy in the public imagination. And as you pointed out, the rate at which registered voters actually turn out to vote is appallingly low. 40% of the people sitting in Parliament today were elected by supporters of the alliance led by the ANC, but that 40% is elected by 14% of the people eligible to vote in the national general elections that are held every 5 years in South Africa. So there is a turning away from the public's participation in constitutional democracy is best expressed, most tellingly expressed in the exercise of the franchise. People died, people fought, people struggled in order to obtain a universal franchise in South Africa, which was not there prior to 1994. And a great proportion of the people, overwhelming proportion of the people, participated in the first election that was held in 1994. And we have not been able to sustain the interest of the public in the institutions and the rituals of the constitutional democracy that is in place in South Africa. And it's a reflection on the population itself, and it's a reflection on our politicians, that there is so little interest, especially among young people, in the form of constitutional democracy that exists in South Africa. Too many people just see it as nonsense and an opportunity to enrich the politically well-connected, which has indeed happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And that their vote will make no difference, which, it has.
Not
in fact
healthy state of affairs.
By a whisker, we now have a government of national unity, which means that South Africa is no longer a dominant party state, which is what it was when the ANC did hold a majority in Parliament. So there is progress on that front, but I'm afraid that ordinary South Africans have themselves to blame if they don't like what is happening in politics and don't do anything by voting to change what is happening in politics.
Advocate Hoffman, I had about 10 questions I wanted to get through with you this afternoon. I've got through two.
I've got through two.
But riveting. I want to just let you end it on a personal note. Just your reflections on Freedom Day. What does it mean to you? If anything, just take a minute and talk to me.
All right. As I see it, the clash in values between the National Democratic Revolution, which is what is being pursued by the ANC and some of the opposition parties, and the values of the Constitution itself, is at the core of what is going on here. The Constitution envisages the separation of powers, a four-legged arrangement where the judiciary deals with disputes between the state and the people and between various private litigants impartially and without fear, favor, or prejudice. It is an independent institution, and it is answerable only to the law and the Constitution, of course. The executive branch of government runs the country. That's the cabinet and the president at the head of the cabinet. Cabinet serves at the pleasure of the president. And the legislature makes the laws and exercises oversight over what is done by the executive, but not very well, because the executive until 2024 was dominated by the ANC, not so much anymore, which is why we had that lovely fight about income tax and VAT increases last year. And then the fourth leg of government is those Chapter 9 institutions, which were meant to be impartial and independent and to bed down the idea of the separation of powers, checks and balances on the exercise of power, an auditor general checking that the books are balancing, a public protector dealing with any organ of state that is not doing its job properly. Those nice things have not happened because of the preponderance of cadre deployment in the Chapter 9 institutions. They are Chapter 9 institutions that work better than other Chapter 9 institutions, and those that do not work well do so because they are populated by people who get up in the morning to implement the National Democratic Revolution rather than the values of the Constitution. And that, I'm now running out of time. I can tell by the intake of breath on your side of the
morning. Thinking, don't tell a lawyer he's got a minute. Don't do that. Lesson learnt.
Yes. So I would say that we are freer now than we were before the new dispensation, and that South Africa is a better place than it would have been had the old dispensation been allowed to continue. There's no doubt about that. But we're not as free, and we're not as attached to our constitutional rights as we should be. How's that for a short 1 minute answer?
It's resonating. That's what I can tell you. It's resonating. It all seems to make a whole lot of sense. Advocate Paul Hoffman, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Appreciate your input.